It's called a Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. This is April 6th. It's approximately 1:32 p.m. on this Tuesday, April 6th. We do have a quorum with us today, present Senator Meyer, Senator Thomas, Senator Bundy, and myself, Senator Pascvan. The purpose of our meeting today is threefold. First, we will be hearing House Bill 354. This relates to the Alaska Capstone Avionics Revolving Loan Fund. Then we will take up House Bill 253 relating to the Mechanic and Materialman's Lien. And then lastly, House Bill 287 relating to the Uniform Act Property Interest Disclaimer. It is my intent to hear, and if it's a will of the committee, to move these three bills today to their next committee of referral. Before we start taking up business, I would like to officially welcome Mary Ann Stepp. She's in the back. And Mary Ann, she is the mother of my chief of staff, Jeff Stepp. So if Mary Ann would please thank you. And as we introduced
her. God bless you.
Yes, I introduced her on the Senate floor a couple of days ago, but she has an undergraduate degree and a master's degree. She just retired from teaching, been married for 47 years to her wife, Terry. So anyway, I think it's we welcome her, so that she can watch her son in action. So anyway, let's begin. I would like to welcome Representative Wes Keller and Matt Johnson. If you choose, come up and present the merits of House Bill 354.
Thank you, Chair Pascoe, and thank you, committee members, for hearing the bill. It's a delight to carry a positive, what I think is an easy bill. I think you're all aware of the Capstone Project. I don't think any cell job is needed. I've had no negatives. If you remember, just to refresh your memory, there was a FAA pilot program in Southeast Alaska and Southwest Alaska, and they claimed a 47% reduction in accident rate because of that pilot. And then since then, the challenge is to get all the aircraft equipped with the proper equipment. And just again, just very quickly, that equipment is just a information for the pilot regarding the terrain, weather, other aircraft. It also functions as an ELT. It functions as a radar, basically, for keeping track of the other airplanes. So I won't spend any more time on that unless there's questions, but all this bill does is changes it so that aircraft operators in the state that lease their aircraft are eligible for the loan that we have put in place so they can equip their airplane. Basically, it was an oversight. I don't think anyone realized how many leased aircraft there were in Alaska, and it's a very positive thing, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that's all I have to say.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, Wes. Just speaking to the zero fiscal note, it's a revolving loan fund that supports itself. Is that accurate?
That's affirmative. The bill is supported by the Department of Commerce, Division of Investments, and we have folks here to answer any questions specifically about the fund. I think we could ask them to come forward. But
if I might add, just do you have a round number, ballpark figure, what it costs to equip an aircraft with the Capstone
rate? Senator Bundy, through the chair, it's been a while since I've looked, but I remember thinking of my own airplanes, and when I saw the number go over 5,000, I decided I wouldn't go there right now. But I don't. My staff probably has a response. Good.
Senator, please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation so that we know who's speaking.
This is Matt Johnson, staff to Representative Keller. Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I believe the upper end is like 15,000, and they are able to borrow up to 80% of that, which would be 12,000. I think that's the upper end of what they can borrow.
Thank you.
The folks from the division could answer that.
Well, for sure. Mr. Chairman, that jibes with my memory of, so it's not something someone's just going to get on a lark. It is, it's a substantial investment, and as such, there's a lot of puddle jumpers that may not choose to get involved.
That's right. Any additional questions of the bill sponsor? Seeing none, are there any people online for House Bill 354? Seeing no one online, is there anyone here that would care to comment upon House Bill 354? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that House Bill 354 be moved to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Any objections?
Object just to make the comment and the disclosure. I am an aircraft owner and could conceivably take advantage of this, particularly if the price comes down substantially. So just put that on the record and remove my objection.
Seeing no objections, House Bill 354 is passed Senate Labor and Commerce. We thank the bill sponsor and his staff for the fine work. We'll just take a brief recess while we sign, and then we could... Come back to order. We have now House Bill 253 relates to Materialman and Mechanicman's liens. We have the bill sponsor, Senator Ramirez, Representative Ramirez, before us. And if you would please state your name and affiliation and present the merits of 253.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jay Ramirez, District 10, Fairbanks. Pleasure to be before you, especially Senator Bundy, who I don't know how many more opportunities I'll have to come before the Senator. It's a privilege. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 253 is not only an exceptional bill, but it also is a bill for one of your constituents who lives over in on Shannon Drive in Shannon Park, our friend Rocky Pavey. And Senator Thomas probably knows Rocky also. He services hundreds, maybe even thousands of boilers across the community of Fairbanks. He brought this bill to my attention, and we took public testimony on the House side. This is our first committee of referral here on the Senate side. We took lengthy testimony from small contractors, overhead door company, a couple of boiler technicians. And simply put, Mr. Chairman, oftentimes in our communities across the state, when we can, we organize regular maintenance, but so oftentimes we call out workmen after hours or for emergencies. And presently, they're subject to a 90-day lien period. Once the first 30 days goes by, they may go because they don't have a regular credit relationship, like a food vendor or a regular provider of paper supplies. I'm thinking of some of the cycle of accounts payable that I generate in my private sector business every 30 days, or that you do as well, Mr. Chairman, in your business for coffee, for water, for supplies, for business or stenographers, court reporting. In this case, we have workmen who are called out irregularly. And as they approach the 90-day period, oftentimes they get shuffled to the bottom of the pile. They're top of the pile when somebody needs their garage door fixed when it's 10 below out, or when their boiler goes out at midnight. But when it comes time to pay that bill, they go to the bottom of the pile. And as such, they are losing their position and their ability to lean jobs. And so on behalf of small shops and working men across the state, this is a, I call this Rocky's bill. It's a mechanic and material man's lien bill, and it extends the lien period from 90 days to 120 days. And I'd be happy to take questions from the committee.
Any questions by any of the committee? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. And I assume you're going to be 30 days in arrears before any concern arises to the vendor's attention. And then they got 2 more months to place a lien. I'm not understanding why that 2 months isn't adequate, and they need really 6 months to, or another couple of months to.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, it's a great question. I think that reasonably people don't anticipate that the bill is due when it's mailed to them, that they see on the bottom of the billing statement that it's due in 30 days. And so as a result, I think that contractors and this class of small business people find themselves in a position where they don't regard the bill, and the people that they're billing often don't pay on upon receipt of an invoice, that they allow 30 days to go by. And so what I understand, and Senator, although there are some people on diesel in the South Central area and on the hillside, in a community like Fairbanks, where we still have we're still a diesel community, what often happens is we get into a situation like we're facing today, where the price of oil has reached $87 a barrel, price of home heating oil is over $3 a gallon. We have families that are seeing $700, $800, $900, $1,100, $1,100 in fuel bills for a monthly period. They call out to get their boiler man to come do a repair late at night when they've lost their service and heat for their home. And then that bill takes a seat behind the regular cycle of paying for their fuel. And so as a result, we see the business owner being punished passively simply because the person for whom they did the work at a distressed time doesn't have the money to pay. And so if the clock doesn't start running until after 30 days, then they only have a 60-day window with which to file a lien. And what we've heard from quite a number of contractors is that it simply isn't an adequate period of time, and they would like it to stretch into an extra 30 days. And we did hear as a criticism that perhaps when the serviceman shows up at your house, they should present to the person that they're doing work a right to waive lien, if I'm saying it correctly, Mr. Chairman. But then you would be accusing the person that you're servicing of bad credit at the moment that you're there to service them, and that isn't a good business practice. So we think this is an excellent compromise to help households and not berate customers at the time of service, and yet to protect these small businessmen from the arrearages that are accumulating without them taking away a tool for them to lien after the 90-day period.
Thank you.
Senator Bundy as well is, and just I think to make sure it's clear, it's not the date of the bill that is important for the lien statute, it's the date of the completion of the service. So if, for example, the furniceman comes in, doesn't give you the bill on the day that he does the job, he says, I'll get the bill to you, that's 2 weeks later, gets the bill out, and then 30 days, you're already maybe 30, 40, 50 days mm-hmm. from the time of the completion of the work. You get one more cycle, and then you're almost up against the 90 days from the completion of the work. So the billing cycle is distinct from the completion of the work trigger date. So it just is a, I believe, a point of clarification.
And Mike, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the explanation. I certainly want small businesses to succeed, none of which will help that person who has their $1,100 a month oil bill, though, and may make life a little more tough for them.
Through the chair, quite true, Senator Bundy.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Senator Thomas?
You're sure the title for this bill is correct? 90 and 120-day time frame we're talking about here?
through the chair, Senator Thomas. I'm just trying to show that I can go backwards and I can go forward.
There you go. Versatile guy. We appreciate that. But the small businesses that you spoke to, they thought the 120 was fine based on the comment, because that was one of my concerns, because oftentimes they get awfully busy and they're small shops, many of them, single person, so going back home and doing the invoicing is delayed oftentimes. So
through the chair, you know, oftentimes these small business people are drawn into the work because they have a passion for it.
Yep.
And sadly, some of my closest friends that have the passion for repairing your stuff show less of an interest in billing you for it promptly, and even less of an interest in collecting it, and with why some of them just make excellent tradespeople, but not such great business people. And so I think that this is an extra buffer, an opportunity for them to not suffer so much from their own procrastination. Most of them are passionate. There are small shops across the state, rural and urban, small, large communities, you know, two to ten-man, ten-person shops, I think, and I think this will be helpful for them.
Thank you.
Sir.
Seeing no further questions from the committee of the bill sponsor, we have a couple of witnesses online. Grace Rudy, overhead door, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Please state your name and affiliation and provide your testimony.
I'm Grace Rudy, and I'm the owner of Overhead Door, and just wanted to say hi to Joe, who I grew up across the street from you. And I don't have anything to add since the last testimony. Do you want me to repeat some of that?
Just be brief, just to state the points that you like.
Okay. After the date of service is done, a lot of times when I've tried to collect bills after the 30 days have passed when the bill is due, you get anything from that the people just don't have the money and they want to make payments, to maybe you can't get a hold of them at all for 60 days. And then after you get a hold of them after 60 days, they let you know that they've been on vacation for a month and now they don't have any more money. And by the time the 90 days is up, you're trying to work with them because you don't want to alienate your customers. But 90 days is not enough time, a lot of times. And another 30 days would be very valuable for the customers and the business people, just for many reasons.
Thank you, Grace Rudy. And Joe says hello back to you.
Yeah, that's right, Grace. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
All right, any questions? Seeing none, we go to Sandra Hembry.
Hi, this is Sandra Hembry with Alaska Plumbing and Heating. And I wanted to add to that in what we do, plumbing and heating work, one situation that we come up quite a bit, especially in the wintertime up here, is when we're dealing with insurance claims for asbestos damage. And just because of the process of dealing with mortgage companies and insurance companies and inspections, in most of those situations, it's at least 90 days before they're ready to even think about processing a payment on those. And in a lot of situations where we're dealing with frozen houses, we're dealing with tens of thousands of dollars rather than hundreds of dollars. And it has happened to several people in the industry that I know where the homeowner gets the check and then we never see the money because they just decide to take off with it. And we don't have a recourse because we have to wait for the insurance adjusters to do their inspections, and then they submit that to the mortgage company, and the mortgage company wants to do their inspections. So it's a very time-consuming process. And in the other situation that we run across a lot, you know, as you know, heating is a requirement in Alaska. We have to have heat in the wintertime. And there's always that situation where someone is between paychecks or they've had a family emergency and they just don't have the money. You know, we want to be able to tell our customers, you know, we'll come out and help you now and we'll work out a payment plan. And we do that frequently, you know, with our customers. We don't have problems, but there is those cases where, you know, okay, we'll set you up in a payment plan. You can pay us in 30 days. Well, then they don't pay us. We have to track them down. by the time we realize that they're just not going to pay, it's at that 90-day mark. We don't want to be forced to file a lien against people that are going to pay their bills. They just can't right at this moment and need some time to work out the details. Because one, that's a matter of public record. We don't file a lien, and that shows up on their credit record that they have that lien, as well as causes adversity between us and our customers that in a lot of cases is completely unnecessary. And that's pretty much all I had to add, so thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? If I understand, Ms. Hembree, is that the insurance company is not making the checkout as a dual payee?
They are supposed to, but in a lot of cases they don't. And in most cases, they make it out to the mortgage company and the homeowner. So then they have to send the check to the mortgage company, get an inspection done. Then the mortgage company will release the money to the homeowner.
And you get, you're outside that chain.
We are outside that chain in most cases. If there's no lien holder and the insurance company is willing, in some cases, they will make it out as a dual check, but that's very rare.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions of Ms. Senator Bundy?
Again, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly, I want businesses to be paid for their services and promptly. In your mind, is there any danger that the word will go out now that someone can drag their feet for another 30 days because you're not going to lien them for another 30 days because you have the time? Is there a negative consequence to this extension?
I don't believe so, because honestly, if you're going to pay your bill, you're going to pay your bill. And if you're not, you're not. That just gives us the extra time to determine in which case is which.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Okay. Please state who the two voices out of...
This is Sandra from Alaska Bass.
And Grace from Overhead Door.
Thank you. And one follow-up by Senator Bundy.
Yeah, well, and to Representative Rammers, there's nothing that would keep folks from beginning a lien sooner if they felt that these were scofflaws, or do they have to wait till the 120 days, or can they begin the lien process sooner?
Through the chair, you could apply a lien right away. It's just you're not likely to build repeat customers that way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Do we have any further people online that would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 253? Seeing none, we close public testimony on House Bill 253. I think it's a pretty good bill. I support the Rocky bill. So I'd entertain a motion, and if there's any discussion, or go right to the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 253 to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 253 is moved out of Senate Labor and Commerce to the next committee of referral. And we commend the bill sponsor for his fine work on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, pleasure to come before your committee, and especially in front of the old lion, Senator Bundy.
Hey, I didn't.
He has eaten me many times in the last 6 years, and it's a privilege to be before him once
you
again.
You don't ask a single question about how you lean a chicken suit.
Hey, can you co-sponsor your bill?
Yes.
That's a good bill.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Who's Rocky?
Rocky Pavey. That was my curveball. He was my boiler man.
Yeah.
High school quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Rocky's good man.
Yeah.
Right.
Max, don't make us look bad.
Yeah.
I may need you.
Jay, do this chicken suit lean to the left or to the right?
Always to the right.
Always to the right.
Always to the right wing. Yeah.
You know why the chicken crossed the road?
Well, get to the other side, I guess.
That was for some foul reason.
You win.
My head? There it is. See you, Don.
Chewing Let's toss this. We don't need that. What I need to talk to you about. This is on.
There you go, sir.
We now bring Senate Labor and Commerce back to order. We now have before us House Bill 287, and the bill sponsor is before us, as well as staff member for the bill sponsor. So the two of you, please identify yourself, state your affiliation, and however you would like to present it, please do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Max Grunberg. I represent House District 20 from Mountain View, Russian Jack in Anchorage. And this is Ms. Gretchen Staft, S-T-A-F-T. She is my chief of staff and my legislative assistant. She's a member of the Alaska Bar. And we have the Honorable Terry Thurbin here, who's a commissioner on uniform state laws from Alaska. She's the chief administrative law judge for the state. And she is here on leave to in her capacity as a uniform law commissioner. We were not able to get the gentleman, Michael Kerr, from the Office of the Uniform Law Commissioners in Chicago. He's on a plane, but he would be available at another point if you had any further questions. And we should have David Schaftel on the line. He's a very fine attorney in Alaska.
Yes,
in Anchorage, doing a he's the head of the probate and trust group that has been working on the bill. And we thank you very much for scheduling it.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Get to the substance of the bill?
Yes. In the Uniform Probate Code, which has been in force in Alaska, and I think most other states, for a long time, in Alaska it was passed in the early 1970s, I don't recall the year, there was one section, and if you look at page 11, line 19, AS 13.12.801, dealt with what are called disclaimers. A disclaimer, Mr. Chair, is a device in probate law where if a person is given a bequest or is a devisee under a will or is a beneficiary of a trust, they can say, I don't want to take this particular asset. And that's called disclaiming it. And it can be done for a number of reasons. It could be done because, for example, the person isn't able to manage the particular asset, if it's a business or a house or something that requires active management. It can also be done for tax purposes. Let me give you an example. If I leave money to my son, and my son is elderly or in bad health and doesn't want to be taxed on that particular bequest, he can disclaim it and it goes directly to his heir, my grandson. And that saves a substantial amount of federal taxes. Originally, this issue was covered in a single section. And since then, the world of probate law has gotten more complex. Tax law has changed. And as a result, the commissioners on uniform state laws have enacted the Uniform Disclaimer of Property Interests Act, which repeals the original section and updates it in a separate act. And with in 25 words or less, this just updates the existing law. We've made very few changes in this. One change we did make was towards the end of the bill, the question is whether any creditor claims would survive. And we put in an amendment that you cannot escape child support obligations by disclaiming, because there are some people that would rather see the money go away than see their ex-spouse get it and take care of the kids. And that was not good public policy. So we made that change. And maybe one day other states will follow suit because we want to protect the children. Aside from that, I don't really have anything to add, if I may.
Ms. Durbin, did you have anything you wanted to add? Not, did you? No. If Mr. Shaftel has anything, I'll defer to him. But I think it's a good bill, and I didn't see much controversy so far in this process.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of the committee? Yes, Senator Myers.
Well, just one, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And thank you, Representative, for presenting this. I noticed here that this started in 1999. Is that correct?
Sometime around the beginning. Mm-hmm.
And 16 states have adopted it since then.
Mm-hmm.
That's over 10 years ago, and I'm just wondering why haven't more states jumped on board? Is there something here I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. I would ask Ms. Thurbin, but I'll give you what my interpretation of that is. The commissioners on uniform state laws have a lot of bills, and they're on a variety of subjects. And some of them are very timely and important, like the Uniform Electronic Signatures Act. We have to do that to keep pace with commerce. Others are less publicized. And in probate law, we have been passing one or two laws each year to deal with the probate of the states and trying to make Alaska more competitive for the group of people who make their living in that area. But probate laws generally aren't very sexy. They're not really dealt with by very many lawyers. I'm particularly interested in uniform laws. I'm on the CSG Committee on Suggested State Legislation, and each time we meet, they may take one law to bring before the country. Very few. So it just takes a while. And I think, and particularly when they start out, it takes a while, 2 or 3 years, before any states usually adopt them. And I think 16 or so in 10 years is not unusual for something like this. The only controversy I'm aware of is there's been a series of law review articles between the reporter who drafted this and one other practitioner from different parts of the country. And there's just some basic philosophical differences there. I can go over that if you really wish. But I have seen no other controversy. And I would say, given the subject matter, this is probably on time online. But if I could turn it over to Ms. Thurbin.
Is there anything that you, please, you're welcome if you'd like to make a comment.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm Terry Thurbin. I'm a Uniform Law Commissioner for the State of Alaska. And I'll just add, I'm speculating as well, but I am not aware of anything, Senator Meyer, other than, as Representative Grunberg suggests, sometimes it's the chicken or egg problem. You need to get momentum. If we can come before you with a Uniform Act that's already got 25 or 30 enactments in other states, we feel like we have more momentum, and so we kind of pick and choose them, and nobody really wants to be first out of the box, but we have quite a few enactments over the last 10 years, and I'm not aware of anything that's a problem with the act that should be a problem for Alaska, but Mr. Shaftel may have a different opinion on that as an Alaska probate attorney.
I would add, if I could, Mr. Chair,
certainly,
that this bill became an orphan bill. It was introduced several years ago, Representative Ledoux carried the bill, and then it ran out of time, and it was some controversy about the child support. We cured that, and then she's no longer here, and it took a little while to pick this up. So, you know, frankly, this was a bill that could have come before us some time ago. Oh, yes, yes. Representative Ramirez has been, he's the first co-prime on this, and he's the person that really scheduled it and everything, and he deserves equal credit for me. I didn't mean to slight him. I would have, but I thought he was gone, so.
He's already had a bill today.
Yeah.
So.
But there was.
Clarify what you mean by that.
I just think that the other thing is that
the folks in Alaska brought this bill forward. It's a uniform act, but the commissioners only traditionally bring to the legislature two or three, maybe not even that many, bills each year. One of the bills they brought last time was the UCC update, which we did. And sometimes it has to politically find somebody who wants to push it, and it doesn't mean it's controversial.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. We now go to Dave Schaftel online.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dave Schaftel. I'm an attorney in Anchorage, and I practice in the area of estate and trust law. I'm a member of an informal group of lawyers who work in this area of law and trust officers who have been working with the legislature since 1997 to suggest what we think would be good additions to the statutory law of Alaska in this area. This particular bill came to our attention several years ago when Representative Ledoux introduced it, and we asked for time to study it, which she graciously gave us. So it held over for a year. And we worked on it, and we consulted with a law professor at Florida State University who had written a number of articles about it. He was supportive of it, but he had some suggestive changes that were very good. We incorporated some of those changes that we thought fit Alaska, and then came back with the bill last year. And of course, last year was a very busy year, and the bill didn't get through then, but Representative Grunberg and Representative Ramirez have graciously sponsored it this year. We think it's a very good bill, and I'd urge your consideration and approval of it.
Any questions by the committee of Mr. Schaftel? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Schaftel. I'm looking at page 7 of the bill, lines 13 and 14, and could you, paragraph E, could you give me an example of, just a simple example of what might be, where that situation might arise?
The language you're looking at is
E, in the case of an interest created by a beneficiary designation made before the time the designation becomes irrevocable, disclaimer shall be delivered to the person making the beneficiary designation.
Yes. Well, this through the chair, Senator Thomas, this whole section that contains this subsection is a procedural section describing how the knowledge of this disclaimer, when somebody disclaims, as Representative Grunberg has described, disclaiming is saying, I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, I don't want it, then it gets transferred either according to the rules stated in this statute or according to directions in the instrument that created that right, that property right, and goes on to whomever is entitled to it. If the person who said, I don't want it, is presumed to have died
That's right.
Before this transfer took effect. So here, they're talking about lines 13 and through 15. They're talking about an interest created by a beneficiary designation made before the time the designation becomes irrevocable. So, for example, you might have a life insurance policy, and you might make a beneficiary designation in that policy of your son or your daughter. And now that's not irrevocable. You could change that beneficiary designation anytime you want. But let's say your daughter says, you know, I really don't want to receive that property. I would rather, I know that when my dad created this, in this beneficiary designation, it says it goes to me, but if I have died, it goes to my children. I'd rather it goes to my children. So even though it hasn't become irrevocable, your daughter can disclaim that interest. And the disclaimer then, the notice that she's disclaiming, would be delivered back to the person making the beneficiary designation, and that is you, Senator Thomas. So that's what this, and these are a number of provisions here. They're really quite thorough. They're attempting to answer the questions of when you disclaim, how do you affect this? How do you make it effective? Who are you going to give notice to so it becomes effective? And that's what these subsections do.
If I may.
Follow up, Senator Thomas.
I was just curious, and you stated exactly what my concern was. If somebody had passed away, does that create the situation where the designation becomes irrevocable?
At that point, it would, yes. So let's go back to our example here.
That's okay. That's just what I was trying to get at. If that's the situation we were talking about by it being becoming irrevocable.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Schaftel, I'm interested in the what Representative Grunberg indicated is the addition that I kind of like with respect to the child support obligation. What are your thoughts on that as far as including that in this disclaimer bill?
Chairman Passman, I think that's a good addition. I think that's just fine. I mean, it's a policy question, certainly, but it's the type of, it's the one exception that appears in other areas of the trust law and makes a lot of sense.
Thank you, and Representative Grunberg.
Just so the members know where we're talking about in the bill, it's on page 9, lines 13 to 15.
It starts 9 through 15.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And I do, as a matter of policy, believe that the disclaimer to avoid a child support obligation or arrearage would be bad public PR. I think it's good that we make that not effective.
And I apologize. It started earlier than I thought. Yeah, it's that whole subsection, yeah.
Any further comments by Mr. Schaftel?
No, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further questions of Mr. Schaftel? Is there anyone else online to speak to House Bill 287? No one online. Is there anyone else in the room that would wish to speak to 287? Seeing none, we close public testimony on House Bill 287. Again, I think it's good public policy. I think it's straightforward. Glad Representatives Ramirez and Grunberg, even though Ramirez is still here, we'll acknowledge him. But anyway, I think it's a good bill, and request a motion.
I'd make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we move committee substitute for House Bill number 287 to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Any objections?
Well, I would object if I were going to be here another year and have to hear another trust bill, but as long as I'm not going to be here and not have to hear more trust, I won't object.
Every year.
Seeing no objections, House Bill 287 is moved out of Senate Labor and Commerce to the next committee of referral. That concludes our meeting today. I would want all the members to note that we do start at 1:30 on Thursday, 1:30 this coming Thursday, and we'll take up three bills then. So given that, Senate Labor and Commerce for this Tuesday is adjourned.